Ever wonder what makes you you? What makes you different from every other person on this planet?
Right.
Well, today we're going deep, deep, deep into the world of mutations.
Okay.
Those tiny little changes in your DNA that make you uniquely you.
Yeah, it's amazing to think about, isn't it?
It is. It's like
these tiny alterations to our genetic code are responsible for like everything.
Right.
From eye color to if you're predisposed to certain diseases or not.
It's like our DNA is a recipe.
Yeah.
And mutations are those little unexpected twists, you know?
Yeah.
Like a dash of cinnamon where you might expect nutmeg.
Yeah.
But even before we get ahead of ourselves.
Sure.
Let's define what a mutation actually is.
Yeah. So in the most basic terms, a mutation is any change in an organism's DNA sequence.
Okay.
This could be anything from like a single letter change in the DNA code.
Okay.
To like larger rearrangements like of genetic material.
So if our DNA is the recipe book,
yeah.
A mutation is like a typo.
Exactly.
In the instructions, yeah. Sometimes harmless.
Yeah.
Sometimes a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
But those typos can also lead to some pretty fascinating variations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where things get really interesting.
Right.
Think of it like this.
Okay.
Every gene in your DNA has the potential to exist in multiple forms.
Okay.
We call these different forms alleles.
Right.
And they arise from, you guessed it, mutations.
Okay.
For example, you might inherit a blue eye allele from your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And a brown eye allele from your dad.
Alleles, right? Yeah. Those variations of a gene,
yeah.
Like different flavors of ice cream, but for our traits.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so mutations create the potential for new alleles.
Right.
But what about those mutations that happen in our bodies?
Yeah.
Like during our lifetime?
Yeah, right.
So like if I develop a freckle from too much sun,
yeah.
Is that a mutation?
That's a great question.
And is that passed on to my kids?
That's a really important distinction to make.
Okay.
We have to separate germline mutations from somatic mutations.
All right.
Germline mutations happen in our egg or sperm cells.
Okay.
And those are the ones with the potential to be passed down to our children.
So those are the mutations that make it into the next edition of the family recipe book.
Exactly. Now, somatic mutations, on the other hand, happen in the cells of our body during our lifetime.
Okay.
Like in your skin cells from sun exposure.
Right.
They might affect us individually.
Okay.
Like causing a freckle.
Sure.
Or more seriously contributing to cancer development.
Wow. So somatic mutations are actually a major player in cancer.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary, but also fascinating.
Yeah.
So they're like typos that happen in the copies of the recipe book.
Not exactly.
That we accumulate throughout life.
Right.
But they don't affect the original recipe itself.
A great way to put it. They impact the individual cells where they occur.
Right.
But they don't get passed down to the next generation.
Got it. So back to those germline mutations for a second.
Yeah.
The ones that can be inherited. Just how often are these typos happening in our DNA?
Right.
Are we talking winning the lottery odds here?
Yeah.
Or are these changes more common than we think?
Yeah, it's more common than you might think. Our research indicates that the chance of a new germline mutation is about 1 in 100 million.
Wow.
Per base pair, per generation.
That's like finding a needle in a haystack.
It is. But remember, our genome has billions of base pairs.
Yeah.
So over generations, those tiny chances add up.
Yeah.
Like making copies of a recipe book over and over.
Yeah.
Eventually, some typos are bound to slip through.
That makes sense. Now, I've always wondered,
do
mutations happen randomly?
Mm.
Or can our environment somehow influence what kind of mutations occur?
Mm.
For instance, if I really need to be better at digesting a certain food.
Okay.
Will my body just like
mutate
to make it happen?
That's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
And it brings us to a pivotal moment in the history of genetics.
Okay.
The Luria-Delbruck experiment.
Okay, let's unpack this experiment.
Sure.
What did these scientists do?
So they were studying.
And what did it tell us about mutations?
Phage resistance in bacteria.
Okay.
Imagine a petri dish.
Okay.
Teeming with bacteria.
Okay, teeming with bacteria. I'm picturing it.
And introduce a virus.
Okay.
That's deadly to these bacteria.
Uh-huh.
Most of them will perish.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It's a bacterial apocalypse.
Exactly. But some bacteria survive.
Okay.
Now the question is, did those bacteria somehow know to evolve resistance to the virus because they needed to survive?
Interesting.
Or was it just random chance?
Okay.
This is where the Luria-Delbruck experiment comes in.
So they were trying to figure out if the environment, in this case, the deadly virus, could actually cause specific mutations, or if those mutations were already there just by chance, waiting to be helpful.
I got it. In the experiments, results were crystal clear.
Okay.
The mutations were random. Bacteria weren't changing their DNA on purpose.
Okay.
To survive the virus.
Okay.
Instead, those random mutations for resistance were already present in the population.
Interesting.
Perhaps at very low levels.
Wow.
When the virus came along.
Yeah.
Those lucky bacteria, the ones with pre-existing resistance, had a huge advantage and survived to reproduce.
It's like winning the lottery just by happening to have the right ticket.
Precisely.
Before the numbers are drawn.
That's a great analogy.
Right.
Yeah. And this is such a critical concept for our listeners to grasp.
Okay.
Mutations aren't inherently good or bad.
Okay.
They just are.
They just exist.
It's the environment that determines whether a mutation gives an organism an advantage,
right,
disadvantage, or has no effect at all.
This is reminding me of something I read about how scientists used to study genes.
Oh, really?
They'd basically cause mutations on purpose in the lab to see what would happen.
Yeah.
Like those poor fruit flies with different eye colors. Yeah.
Is that what's known as forward genetics?
Yes, exactly.
Forward genetics. That's, it sounds so deliberate.
Yeah.
Like scientists were playing genetic roulette.
Yeah.
With these flies.
Yeah. You're not far off. Forward genetics was a bit like taking a shotgun to a genome. And seeing what interesting mutations emerged.
Okay.
It was a powerful tool.
So instead of waiting for those random typos to happen naturally, they're basically forcing the issue.
Exactly. They would induce mutations using things like X-rays or chemicals.
Right.
And then observe the effects on the organisms.
And one of the sources talks about Hermann Muller's experiments.
Yeah.
With fruit flies back in the 1920s.
Yeah.
Like he used X-rays to trigger mutations.
Yeah.
And then studied the changes that he observed in the flies.
It's really incredible.
Like those iconic red eyes on fruit flies.
Yeah.
I remember learning about how mutations could turn them white.
That's a classic example.
Yeah.
Muller's work with the fruit flies was really instrumental.
In linking specific genes to observable traits.
Okay.
Imagine a fly with those vibrant red eyes.
Okay.
Now, picture a mutation causing those eyes to change color.
Yeah.
To white.
Yeah.
Maybe even a completely different shape.
Oh, wow.
It's a powerful visualization.
Yeah.
Of how even a tiny change in the DNA blueprint
can
have a dramatic effect on the final outcome.
Okay, that makes total sense.
Like
changing one ingredient in a recipe and ending up with a completely different dish.
Totally.
But if scientists were intentionally creating these mutations, wouldn't that mean they could eventually pinpoint all the genes?
You think so, right?
Yeah.
But there's a catch.
Okay.
Sometimes those typos in the genetic code, those mutations can be pretty drastic.
Oh, okay.
Imagine swapping sugar for salt
in
a cake recipe.
You'd end up with a very unpleasant surprise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Some mutations are just too detrimental.
Right.
They might prevent the organism from developing properly or even surviving at all.
So those lethal mutations would be like a recipe that simply doesn't work.
Yeah.
You never get to see the final product because it's completely inedible.
Perfect analogy.
Right.
And those lethal mutations are a blind spot for forward genetics.
Right.
We can't study the effects of a mutation.
Right.
If the organism doesn't survive long enough to exhibit the trait.
So it's like evolution's own version of survivorship bias.
Exactly.
We're only able to study the mutations that allow organisms to live long enough to be observed in the first place.
Precisely.
Okay.
And that's why forward genetics, while groundbreaking for its time, had its limitations.
Right.
It gave us a glimpse into the world of genes and mutations.
Yeah.
But it couldn't tell us the whole story.
So what came next? Did scientists find a way to like work around those limitations?
That's where things get really exciting.
Okay.
But before we delve into the world of modern genetic tools, let's take a detour.
Okay.
To explore one of the most remarkable experiments in evolutionary biology.
Yeah.
Richard Lenski's long-term evolution experiment with E. coli bacteria.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It's like a real-life time machine.
Totally.
For observing evolution in action.
It is.
They've been growing these bacteria in a lab for decades.
You're exactly right. It's been running for over 75,000 generations.
Wow.
And it's given us incredible insights into the power of mutations and natural selection.
Okay, so for those of us who need a refresher, can you like set the stage?
Yeah.
What exactly did Lenski and his team do?
Imagine 12 flasks.
Okay, 12 flasks.
Each containing a simple growth medium.
Okay.
Essentially food for bacteria.
Gotcha.
Now introduce identical populations of E. coli into each of these flasks.
Okay.
And they've been tracking the evolution of these bacteria.
Okay.
Under these controlled conditions.
Right.
Meticulously analyzing their genetic makeup.
Wow.
And observing any changes that occur.
That's still going strong, right?
Oh, yeah, they're still going.
Wow. So what have they learned after all these years?
It's incredible.
And generations of bacteria.
One of the most astonishing discoveries came after about 31,500 generations.
Oh, wow.
One of the E. coli populations.
Yeah.
Completely by chance.
Okay.
Evolved a remarkable new ability.
Wait, is this about the citrate thing?
Yes.
I think I remember reading about this.
Yeah.
Didn't they evolve to eat something they weren't supposed to?
That's exactly right. This particular E. coli population developed the ability to metabolize citrate.
Wow.
A source of energy they typically can't utilize when oxygen is present.
So they hit the genetic jackpot after thousands of generations.
They did.
Wow.
And it was a huge deal.
So a random mutation popped up, gave them an advantage in that environment.
Huge advantage.
And then just spread like wildfire through the population.
And remember, this all happened naturally.
Wow.
It wasn't through genetic engineering or intentional manipulation.
Right.
It was pure evolution unfolding in a flask.
This just makes you wonder what other, like, hidden potential might be lurking in the genomes of other species, mm-hmm. just waiting for the right circumstances.
Totally.
Or that lucky mutation to unlock it.
It's a humbling thought, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
But what's even more remarkable is that the researchers were able to trace the lineage of this CIT plus population backward in time.
Oh, okay.
They discovered that a predisposing mutation had occurred much earlier, around generation 20,000.
Okay.
This mutation on its own didn't give the bacteria the ability to use citrate, but it laid the groundwork for that CIT plus mutation to emerge later on.
So it wasn't just one lucky strike.
Right.
It was a series of events.
Yeah.
With earlier mutations setting the stage for that game-changing adaptation.
Exactly.
It's like evolution was playing a long game.
I love that analogy.
Of genetic chess.
Yeah.
Making strategic moves over thousands of generations.
A fantastic way to put it. It highlights the incredible complexity and often unpredictable nature of evolution.
Yeah.
And it's this very complexity that brings us to the cutting edge of genetic research.
We're talking about CRISPR, right?
We are.
That gene editing technology that's been making headlines.
Yeah.
The one that has the potential to revolutionize medicine and pretty much everything. CRISPR, it sounds like something out of like a science fiction movie.
It really does.
We've been talking about mutations as these random events, these typos in the code of life.
Yeah.
But now we have a tool that lets us edit that code directly.
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing.
It really is a game changer.
Yeah.
With CRISPR-Cas9, we've gone from observing the randomness of mutations to actually directing them.
Okay.
With incredible precision.
Okay. So how does it work?
Okay.
Break it down for me like I've never even heard of CRISPR before.
Imagine you have a massive library.
Okay. A massive library. Got it.
And one book has a single typo on a single page. CRISPR is like having a magical tool that lets you walk directly to that book, open it to the exact page, and correct that typo.
Wow.
Without disturbing any other letters in the entire library.
That's an incredible analogy.
But
how is that even possible?
So CRISPR technology utilizes a system that bacteria have been using for millions of years to defend themselves against viruses.
Okay.
Essentially, it's a two-part system.
Okay.
You have the Cas9 enzyme, which acts like a pair of molecular scissors.
Okay, molecular scissors.
And a guide RNA molecule, which tells the scissors exactly where to cut the DNA.
So it's like a guided missile for editing our genes.
Precisely.
Wow.
Scientists can engineer the guide RNA to match any DNA sequence they want to target.
Okay.
The guide RNA then leads the Cas9 enzyme to that specific location in the genome and snip.
Okay.
The DNA is cut.
Okay, hold on. We've cut the DNA. Yeah. Now what?
Now what?
Does the cell just panic?
Not quite.
Okay.
Cells are remarkably good at, like, repairing themselves. Right.
They have built-in mechanisms to fix breaks in their DNA.
Oh, okay.
When the CRISPR system makes a cut, the cell rushes to repair it.
Yeah.
And this is where things get really interesting.
Okay.
Because the repair process isn't always perfect.
Okay.
Sometimes it introduces small errors.
Okay.
Like adding or deleting a few letters in the DNA code and those errors.
Okay.
Those are essentially mutations, but mutations that we've intentionally introduced.
So CRISPR allows us to make targeted mutations.
Exactly.
Instead of relying on just like the whims of chance.
Yeah.
This is huge. What are the implications of this technology?
The potential is vast.
Yeah.
And frankly, a bit daunting.
Yeah.
On one hand, we now have a powerful tool that could potentially correct genetic defects that cause debilitating diseases.
Okay.
Think of conditions like cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy,
or
Huntington's disease.
Right.
CRISPR could offer a way to cure these diseases at their root cause.
By fixing the faulty genes.
It's like we're finally getting a handle on the editing tools of life itself.
Right.
This could be revolutionary for so many people.
Absolutely. But it also raises some important ethical considerations.
Right.
We're talking about manipulating the very essence of what makes us human.
Yeah.
What limits should we place on this technology?
Right.
Should we use it for more than just treating diseases?
Right. Are there other things we could be doing?
What about enhancing human traits like intelligence or physical abilities?
It's a lot to consider.
It really is.
And it all stems from these tiny, seemingly insignificant changes in our DNA.
Right.
Who knew that those accidental typos, those mutations, held the key to both our past and potentially our future?
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. It's a humbling and awe-inspiring thought.
It is.
The power of randomness to shape the diversity of life.
Yeah.
And now our own emerging ability to harness that power.
Yeah, it's really cool, isn't it?
Observing evolution's grand experiment, right?
To potentially directing it ourselves.
Yeah.
It's quite a thought to leave our listeners with.
For sure.
Where do we go from here?
Yeah.
That's something I'll be pondering for a long time.
As will we all. I think the future of genetics is unwritten, but one thing is certain.
What's that?
It promises to be a fascinating journey.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of mutations.
It was fun.
Until next time, keep those questions coming.
Yes.
And never stop exploring the wonders of science.